everyone, and welcome to Cornwall Insight's latest podcast. My name's Jamie Moll. I'm a research analyst at Cornwall Insight, and I'm joined today by my colleague, Dr. Matthew Chadwick, a lead research analyst at Cornwall Insight. In today's podcast, we'll be discussing the opportunities and challenges being faced as we pursue the transition to a green economy in the UK. To first provide some context, the UK has a legally binding target to establish a net zero economy by 2050, with further emissions reductions targets in the interim, and an ambition to achieve power sector decarbonisation by 2035. Now, while significant progress has been made towards these targets so far, future success will ultimately be reliant on the UK's ability to incentivise further investment in the green transition as we move forward. And time is really of the essence here, as it would appear that the bulk of this investment needs to materialise soon, with the Climate Change Committee and its sixth carbon budget estimating that the UK will need to leverage up to £50 billion per year by 2030, while the National Infrastructure Commission has estimated an annual average investment of £30 billion towards 2050. At present, however, the UK is falling short of these estimated requirements, as in the last two financial years, investment has only reached about £22 to £25 billion per financial year, creating an ever-steepening trajectory for the UK to meet. This issue has been further compounded by macroeconomic headwinds over the past few years as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the energy crisis. Inflation and interest rates have risen in major economies across the world, and the UK has been particularly hard hit by this changing environment, with the economy entering into technical recession after two negative quarters in quarter four of 2023 and quarter one of 2024. Thus, the UK finds itself with a steepening investment trajectory in a tight macroeconomic environment. In this podcast, we'll discuss how green investment in the UK is likely to develop as we approach decarbonisation targets, and what changes could potentially be made to ensure that the UK can keep up with other major economies and reap the benefits of the green transition. So I'll begin by asking Matthew, given the macroeconomic difficulties we've encountered over the past few years, has there been a changing appetite for investment in the UK, and how does this compare to other jurisdictions?
Thanks, Jamie. You've already mentioned the macroeconomic challenges around sort of high inflation and interest rates that we've faced in the UK. And really, in addition, we've also seen how the rising cost of global commodities has impacted on supply chains, ultimately resulting in the abandonment of some projects, such as the Norfolk Boreas wind farm, as well as contributing to the failure to secure any new offshore wind capacity in the fifth allocation round of the Contracts for Difference scheme. And these challenges are further compounded by the inherent political risk, particularly given that it's an election year, with any sort of unclear or mixed messaging running the risk of creating an investment hiatus, or even worse, the offshoring of investment to other, maybe more favourable jurisdictions. And whilst it should be noted that the macroeconomic and supply chain issues are far from unique to the UK, with these pressures being felt in other major global jurisdictions such as the US and the EU. In fact, it could additionally be argued that in terms of political risk, jurisdictions such as the US are potentially even more volatile, with certainly less cross political spectrum consensus on topics such as net zero. But on the other hand, in response to the macroeconomic challenges and difficulties that we've experienced, these other jurisdictions have seen sort of a range of countermeasures launched to really help protect and draw in that investment. And so the UK potentially risks the chance of slipping behind in this policy arms race.
That's really interesting. So it seems then that the problems that we've encountered in the UK aren't necessarily unique, but other jurisdictions have perhaps responded to them more proactively than we have. I suppose in that case, where is it that we're seeing capital being invested at the moment? And additionally, where is it coming from?
Yeah, so China, the EU and the US are the jurisdictions where we've seen the majority of sort of absolute investment in the energy transition during the last year. Although on a per capita basis, it should be noted that the UK is actually outperforming these economies. But in terms of where the capital is coming from, over the last decade, we've really seen this transition from around 80% of global investment in renewables coming from equity financing to a situation where now the vast majority is coming from debt financing. And this growing role of debt in the flow of capital to help support the energy transition really underlines the importance of de-risking cash flows and providing that strong policy support, as debt financiers are inherently more risk averse and they will invest their capital in the economies and the sectors that yield the best sort of stable returns.
Interesting. So you mentioned earlier that the US in particular has been a really attractive investment destination over the past year. What is it that's actually prompted investors to want to develop projects in the US market, and how is that impacting on wider investment flows? So, you know, is this increased interest in the US likely to have a, you know, an impact on investor sentiment in the UK, and maybe more broadly across Europe as well?
Yeah, the main incentive to invest in the US has been through the Inflation Reduction Act, or the IRA, which is providing, you know, up to $369 billion of subsidy support over a 10-year period across a range of sectors that help support the clean energy transition. And this subsidy support has unlocked over sort of $260 billion so far in investment in the US renewable energy sector since the inception of the IRA back in sort of August 2022. And in addition, the result of the sort of domestic content requirements that are included within the IRA means that there are concerns that it will continue to draw some of the maybe more mobile capital away from jurisdictions such as the EU and the UK, and really result in the relocation of operations and investments into the US. Now, whilst the IRA has no doubt been successful in increasing US investment in the energy transition, as I highlighted, it is by no means a total panacea, with areas such as the offshore wind sector in particular not seeing any meaningful growth in the US off the back of this subsidy support. And additionally, as we've already discussed, there is that greater potential for political risk attached to the US than what we see in European jurisdictions, with topics like climate change and net zero definitely given more sort of polarizing amongst the US electorate.
So it seems then that the, you know, while the US has been able to position itself as a, you know, a highly attractive investment destination through the Inflation Reduction Act, it's perhaps not going to act as a, you know, a total sponge to soak up all global capital, if you will. I suppose my next question then would be, what can the UK do to ensure that it's able to take advantage of this and ensure that investors find the UK an attractive destination for their capital?
Thanks. Yeah. So a theme that I've tried to highlight throughout this podcast is that importance of a stable and supportive policy environment. So attracting mobile global capital to invest in the UK, especially with a growing portion of that capital coming from these more risk-averse debt financing structures, is really dependent on having that supportive policy framework. And a component of this will be provided through reforms of the existing Contracts for Difference subsidy scheme, for example, such as those being considered under the Review of Electricity Market Arrangements, or REMA, to really ensure that the Contracts for Difference scheme remains fit for purpose in the future, and we don't see a repeat of the issues that we experienced in allocation round 5. Having said that, while subsidy support is going to be key to promoting investment in the UK, we do need to be aware of the increasing competition from other sectors of the economy for that sort of share of public spending. In the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic and the aging nature of the UK population, it's going to put increasing pressures on the healthcare and welfare budgets. And the increasingly unstable geopolitical situation is fairly likely to require a growth in our military spending budget in the not too distant future. I mean, the sensitivities of net zero spending to other sort of public spending commitments can really be seen through things like the Labour Party dropping their £28 billion spending plan. And these pressures only look set to grow as we go towards sort of 2050.
So do you think that these considerations, things you mentioned, like, you know, perhaps reforming the CFD or, you know, carrying out the REMA programme, do you think that they can do enough to leverage the massive amounts of investment needed to reach net zero on time, whilst also providing benefits across the economy? Or are there perhaps some other deeper rooted issues that also warrant our consideration?
So we really find ourselves in a new world here with growing investment requirements, as you've mentioned, to sort of decarbonize the economy, but significant macroeconomic headwinds. Now, having said that, investment can still thrive in the UK, and particularly with the sort of subsidy support that's important for de-risking cash flows and helping to crowd in that debt financing. When the other constraints on public spending are taken into account, it becomes increasingly clear that levies on consumer bills and general taxation are going to play a crucial role in funding that net zero transition. And this really brings me on to the final point that I want to raise around public awareness, and do the public truly appreciate that they will need to form the sort of main source of money for underwriting these cash flows and investment in net zero? And really, in this vein, it is sort of crucially important that we reassess our current funding models to ensure that the distribution of costs and benefits are sort of sustainable and equitable going forward, as well as having a frank and honest conversation with consumers about the cost of the net zero transition, who's going to benefit and when.
Well, I want to thank you very much for your input today, Matthew. It's definitely a lot to think about, and I think you've done a great job of highlighting the not only the scale of the change that we're facing, but also the new environment that we find ourselves needing to make progress in. For anyone who's interested, some of the points that we've covered in our discussion today are talked about in more detail in Cornwall Insights 2023 paper entitled Race to Net Zero: Rebuilding Investor Confidence in the UK. So feel free to check that out. And if you'd like any more information about anything that we've discussed, then do please just reach out to either myself or Matthew. Other than that, I want to thank you for listening and take care.